Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone, the first episode of 2017. My name is Kieran Tavam, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend out in the United States, JJ Duke, although I think he is surrounded by quite a lot of snow at the moment. JJ, managed to plough yourself out, mate?
The weather gods just are never fond of the Northeast, let's just put it that way, in the United States. But yeah, no, we're all plowed out. White Christmas came about 2 weeks too late, but Happy New Year to everybody and all of our listeners out there.
Yeah, of course, Happy New Year to everyone. Lots of stuff going on with Women's Soccer Zone this year and some exciting stuff coming up that we'll be able to tell you about in the coming weeks. And actually, the next episode that JJ and I record will be in person because we're going to be both in LA for the 2017 NWSL College Draft, which is occurring a little later this week. But for this episode, we've got quite a lot to pile through. Obviously, we haven't done a show for a little while, so we're not going to go over massive old ground, but there obviously some stuff has happened over the last week or two, certainly, that we'd like to cover. And I guess rather than going through a running order, JJ, we'll maybe just go through step by step. And maybe the first subject that we should discuss is some of the worst kept secrets over the last few months finally came to fruition over the last week or two. We saw some transfers occur in France. We saw Ashley Lawrence join Paris Saint-Germain, a move that had been mooted quite a lot in the United States over the last few months, especially with the draft coming up. And Ashley, well, there was certainly speculation, wasn't there, whether Ashley would enter that draft because of links to the French league. And she has actually decided to go and sign for PSG. And I think the one that we all expected, and certainly one that's been doing the rounds for quite some time now, Alex Morgan going from the Orlando Pride to Lyon on a 6-month contract. I mean, as I say, it's one of the worst kept secrets, or two of the worst kept secrets, certainly. But the response from people, I think, has been quite mixed. I think there are people that look at Alex Morgan's move as a good one for her and for Lyon. It will be a new experience for her, an opportunity to play in a different league. But there's always that doubt, isn't there, when a player of her calibre goes to a league like France, where it's very top heavy. And some people are questioning, actually, what sort of experience is she going to get from it in terms of her development?
Well, I guess, you know, I'll try to do my best to summarize the positives from what some people think and the negatives. So, yeah, the positives, she said this is a move that, you know, she had to follow her heart. You know, this is something that she has wanted to do for a long time, go play in Europe. And obviously, when you have anybody, you throw out the question of, do you want to play Champions League football? I think 99 out of 100 will say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and take that opportunity. Obviously, she's going to be going to the best club in the world. I think there's little doubt that we can argue that point at the moment, because you look at that front line. She's going to be paired with Eugenie Le Sommer, amongst others, and she's going to be a player that, you know, she's going to benefit from playing with those players day in, day out, because she'll have an opportunity to learn from those players and integrate her own style into that team. And also, she's going to be in a phenomenal training environment as well, and that's going to be one of the most skillful and fastest sides in the world. But on the negative side, what people are obviously saying is, you know, as you said, Kieran, it's a top-heavy league. You know, you have to show up for a couple of matches domestically, obviously have the quarterfinals coming up in Champions League, but I think it's you can go with the risk of training with the best team in the world day in and day out, and if you have to slog through a couple of one-sided matches, so be it.
Yeah, I mean, I watch probably more French football than I guess the average listener, and that's not me patronizing. And if there are a lot that do watch French football, then fair play to you. I'm hopeful that you will have seen a lot of Lyon and PSG, because quite frankly they're the only two teams that really do get shown. I think for me, one of the key things is Alex has said it's about development. I think it probably is an element of that. I think I went on a radio station when she signed, and I was quite open and said, look, I think it would be naive to assume that this is purely down to development and the opportunity to play in a team like that. There are financial rewards to this move. There's no doubt about that. But when people say, is she going to develop and is she actually going to get any better? I appreciate she's a little bit older, but I would use the example of someone like Ada Hegerberg, who, when she joined Lyon, she was a striker at Turbine Potsdam who had an abundance of potential, but the move to Lyon really unlocked it. And she has developed into, well, in my mind, the best striker in the world, or certainly one of the best strikers in the world. She was one of the biggest prospects in the world when she was at Tabina. But it was the move to Lyon. And as you say, being in that environment where you are training day in, day out with the best players in the world, or some of the best players in the world, with some of the best training facilities in the world that are available in the women's game, Alex Morgan is now going to have that exposure. And while she's, as I say, 26, 27 years old and not the 18, 19-year-old that Ada Hegerberg was when she joined the club, there's no reason why Alex Morgan can't improve and why she can't get better.
No, absolutely. I mean, you can look at Alex Morgan and Ada Hegerberg's careers, and there's a lot of similar paths. You know, we saw, as you highlighted with Ada's career, you know, a bright prospect, raw at times, but still, you know, could get the job done in a very competitive league. And now she's come into Lyon and has really, you know, assumed herself as one of the top players in the world. You look at Alex Morgan's career coming out of college. She was, you know, used primarily as that super sub role with the U.S. national team. Who would come on late on, implement dynamic speed, you know, cause havoc in the back line for 20, 30 minutes or so. Then she saw her game blossom to an all-around player. Obviously, the one difference, and, you know, as you said, Alex has a few years on Ada, is she's had a few injuries. Now, you know, playing with this team, we believe that she's fully, that, you know, 100% right now. Obviously, no player ever is at 100%, but as close as possible as you can get. And, you know, hopefully she can find some of the old to then implement into some of the new and become the player that we all know that she can be.
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. I mean, look, we could talk about Alex Morgan all day long. Hasn't made her debut yet. The day that we're recording, fellow new signing Josephine Henning did make her debut in an 8-0 Coupe de France win. I know that doesn't do anything for our argument that it's going to be a good opportunity for Alex in the fact that the first game that they've had since she joined, they've won 8-0. But I do think it's going to be a benefit, and I do think Alex will get a lot out of the experience. And apparently, Lyon are going to be making a web series on Alex's time in Lyon, so it might even be that we get to see a little bit of her time while she's in France. But it'll be interesting anyway, but I wish her well, because I think it's a good opportunity, and I'll certainly look to get out to Lyon for a game or two, certainly when they have that game against Wolfsburg in the UEFA Women's Champions League. Now, I mentioned Ashley Lawrence's move to PSG, and you can talk to me a bit more about that one in terms of what she'll bring to PSG, because you will have certainly seen more of her than I have. But Khadija Buchanan is also to join Lyon. President Jean-Michel Aulas said in a press conference where he unveiled Alex Morgan and Josephine Henning, he confirmed that Khadija Buchanan would be joining the club. Now, with Ashley and Khadija both deciding to go to France as opposed to entering the college draft that takes place this week, what does that say, number one, about their thoughts towards maybe the NWSL? And number two, why it was necessarily you think that they maybe chose the two clubs that they've gone to?
Well, it's interesting because first off, with the two, yes, going to France, but they're going to different teams. This is the first time in maybe both of those players' careers, outside of maybe some youth soccer in their young days, that they've not been on the same team. So that's something to keep in mind as well, because they obviously played club together, then they went to college together. They're a package deal. They came up to the national team together. So that'll be interesting just to follow from a neutral perspective. In terms of the NWSL, I think it wasn't really the league in itself. I think the players, they felt from a while ago that they were going to test European waters. Not to say that's a slight against the NWSL. There's obviously a financial benefit, though they would have been a shoo-in to have been allocated players. So, you know, the Canadian Soccer Federation would have most likely have fronted, you know, their salaries. But with that being said, I think, you know, again, it comes down to the money. It comes down to playing Champions League. It comes down to testing yourself in the best environment in the world. And I think, you know, it's a steal that West Virginia had that pair for the last 4 years, because Khadija Buchanan, I believe, was one of, if not the best defender in the world, playing for a college team. And Ashley Lawrence, who can play multiple positions, can be dynamic when playing in attack, can defend with the savviest of them. And I think she's going to add a nice little element to PSG, something that they haven't had in a while.
Yeah, I agree. What I've seen of Ashley Lawrence, I like. I thought she was excellent at the Olympics, and I think she'll be a useful addition. Has signed a contract until 2018. I think this is the thing as well. We're seeing these players come over from North America. They're not necessarily staying for big contracts, are they? They're certainly not looking at the long term. I think they're looking at these opportunities as very much a short-term opportunity to get some experience, and then maybe we'll see them return to closer to home. But I think it's a good move for Ashley. I think PSG is a good club, and she'll have some good players around her. Another player who has, of course, gone to PSG is Amandine Henry. She's gone on a short-term loan contract from the Portland Thorns ahead of the NWSL season, and that's obviously a player that Patrice Lair knows very well, the coach of PSG, having coached her at Lyon. Now, I want to stick very momentarily on PSG, because in the last few days, we learned that they have received a 4-point deduction for fielding an ineligible player in a game earlier on in the season. Now, according to the French Football Federation, Sarah Palacin was played in the opening game of the season away at Albi, that PSG won 4-0. Now, she wasn't actually registered on the team sheet, so for some reason or somehow, PSG fielded a player they didn't actually write down on the team sheet. So as a result of that, not only have Albi been awarded the victory, and that victory has been taken away from PSG, PSG have also been deducted a further point. So they've gone from being 3 points clear at the top, ahead of Lyon and Montpellier. They've had a 4-point deduction, so they now find themselves a point behind the two clubs. And in a league, JJ, where points are so difficult to take off of Lyon. Obviously, PSG beat Lyon a few weeks ago, but it's not very often that we see them lose. And now they find themselves behind Montpellier as well. That's disastrous for the club. And what makes things worse is that, according to French media, Patrice Lair actually offered his resignation after that result came through.
Yeah, that's it's a lot of stunning news. What I've been told is that PSG has the opportunity to appeal this decision. One would have to think that it's probably not going to be overturned, because knowing how transfer rules work, or you know, having roster sheets in time, it's a very fine line. You have to announce who you're going to have on the 18 that day. If you don't do it in a prompt fashion, or if you forget a player, you're going to be done for pretty much, because one way or another, even if it's the most publicized league in the world, or if it's, you know, fifth division somewhere in random country, it'll still be brought up to terms. So, it's unfortunate, because PSG, they've done brilliantly this year. They beat Lyon, which, you know, you could probably count on one hand, Kieran, how many teams, unique teams in the last 5 years have beaten Lyon head-to-head. And it's at a point right now that all of a sudden PSG, not only are they going to have to deal with Lyon, they have to deal with the challenge at Montpellier. They're starting to find the arms in this Arsenal race. They won't win the league this year, but they have a chance to, you know, potentially slot into Champions League spot right now, which would be absolutely gut-wrenching for PSG. So now not only are they going to have to find that points off Lyon, but they're going to have to hope that Lyon drop points, then they have to beat Montpellier. There's a lot of factors that this team wasn't looking at just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, before we move on, we should mention Montpellier, because you rightfully say they are a team that certainly shouldn't be underestimated. They're certainly in the running for UEFA Women's Champions League, and they've boosted their chances of qualifying with two really top signings, haven't they? They announced in the last week that they've signed Belgian international Janice Kaiman, who of course finished the season last year with the Western New York Flash, and Stina Blackstenius as well, the Swedish striker who, of course, was one of the top scorers in the Swedish Damallsvenskan last year, won the league with Linköping, and has now made the move over to France. I think many actually saw that one as a little bit of a surprise, because she's so highly rated. No disrespect to Montpellier, but I think some maybe expected her to go to a club even bigger.
Yeah, they did. I think that might be, Kieran, one of the biggest signings of this transfer window, just because, you know, not to obviously say that, you know, Alex Morgan or Kadisha Buchanan, Ashley Lawrence, just looking in France in itself, but in terms of someone who can come in immediately and make an impact. You always talk about that return on investment. Well, Stina Blackstenius probably had the best 2016 that anyone could have imagined, put herself right onto the map of people who may have not heard about her outside of, you know, playing in Sweden. So this is a real opportunity for Montpellier, and they need to run with it, because if she can continue to produce at the level that she was with her last club, which one would think that she probably will be able to, there's a good chance that they might sneak into that Champions League, the second spot.
Yeah, definitely a bright future for Montpellier, definitely a club to keep an eye on. And equally, we mentioned the fact that that Blackstenius has left Linköping. They've had Linköping have had their squad decimated. They certainly have made some reinforcements, and I know that speaking to some who follow the Swedish league a lot more than I do, don't think that Linköping are in as bad a state as maybe people might think they are. But they've lost Blackstenius, they've lost Fridolina Rolfo, who joined Bayern Munich before Christmas. Coach Martin Sjogren has just left the team, and he's been announced as the Norway women's national team manager, which, let's be honest, with the players that he's got to work with, you'd have to fancy them to be one of the outsiders for the Euros in the Netherlands. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see with Linköping. But look, I think we've discussed the French league and some of the moves that's happened there in enough detail, and I think we'll have a little short break, mate. And when we come back, we've got to talk about something that's cropped up in England. A bit of a difficult story concerning one of the teams in the WSL.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
So, JJ, this week there was a story put up on the website of Sunderland Ladies Football Club to announce that the team, after 3 years of having had a full-time and part-time model, so a combination of players that were contracted full-time and some who had part-time commitments with the club and elsewhere, that would be scrapped, and they will be going to a fully part-time model where all players, well, I'm assuming, will be on part-time contracts. Now, in a league that is developing, in a sport in general that is developing, this is hugely disappointing, isn't it? I guess for many, this is seen as a big backward step, and it's very difficult to disagree with that.
It is. I mean, I'm looking at the report that the BBC put out just a few days prior to our recording. You can't be surprised with this, though, unfortunately, because you look at the model that they wanted to go to, they're not seeing that return come to them. Whether that would be by, you know, bringing in full-time players to have impact on the club with the mix of the part-time players, obviously knowing from years past, and Karen, you can obviously talk on days about this, it's only been in the last couple of years that teams are really starting to become fully, you know, run by full-time players and professionals, as opposed to having that mix of the full-time and part-time. You see that the numbers that this team is bringing out in terms of attendance, they've had the biggest increase in the top division. They fell by nearly a quarter, 24%, to 700 person attendance average. That's not good for a league that you said that's probably one of the, you know, the upper end of building and gaining momentum and trying to really establish themselves as one of the top leagues in the world.
It's difficult for me to put a case forward in terms of the attendance numbers. I agree. There's not really a lot more I can say. You know, when you see that drop off and you see the numbers as they are, there's not really anything that I can comment. There's nothing I can say to try and defend that. There isn't anything. What I will say, and I think, and the person who can say it better than anyone is Jen O'Neill, who people will know is the editor of She Kicks magazine. Now, Jen is based in the Northeast. She's a Sunderland fan. She played for Sunderland not so long ago. And she has put a brilliant blog post up on her website. I certainly recommend people have a read of that on shekicks.net. Sunderland Ladies have had a tradition for many years of developing and bringing through players in the area and giving them an opportunity to really thrive. Now, players in the past that have come through the system include the likes of Jordan Nobbs, Steph Horton, Carly Telford, Jill Scott, Lucy Bronze, you know, some really, really quality players who've gone on to represent their national team. Now, all of those players left Sunderland Now, a lot of them left because they had the opportunity to progress at bigger clubs, but I think a lot of them left because they were given opportunities to further develop in, you know, more professional environments. Now, for the last 3 years, Sunderland have tried to implement that with the combined full-time and part-time model. They were able to bring in players like Steph Roach on a full-time contract. Now, with moving to that part-time model, there are players who are on full-time contracts who don't know what's going to happen to their future. I haven't been in a position to speak to any of the players. As far as I'm aware, the players aren't in a position to speak about it, because if you look at social media, I don't think any of them have said anything on the matter. I think past players have, but if you look at the current squad, I don't think anyone has come out and said, I think this or I think that. My concern now is for them. What happens to those players who are contracted on full-time contracts, who are now going back to a club for the start of the 2017 season on a part-time model?
I'm going to use a word, Kieran, that I don't often use in terms of either radio broadcasting or podcasting. It sucks. It truly sucks, because you look at, I mean, you know, Sunderland haven't exactly been making waves in the top division, but they've been consistently staying up. And then you have the model run the last couple of years where you can have a full-time contract. You can start, you know, setting down roots in the area. You know, people tend to forget the fact that, you know, outside of football or soccer, you know, people, you know, these players are people at the end of the day. You know, they have to find places to live. They have to, you know, assimilate themselves into the area and, you know, try to make something of it. Whether, you know, for some of these part-time players, they'll have either their studies or they'll have other jobs to make it work, but at least it's all in a local area. Now you have these full-time players basically have it ripped, you know, their contracts ripped out from under them. I'm not sure how it would work, you know, over for, you know, the WSL for a part-time contract, but, you know, for leagues that are run on a part-time basis here in the U.S., you get your game payment, and that's about it. So, you know, now you have to all of a sudden go back and be like, well, how am I going to make this work? Hopefully, you know, for those full-time players, they either find a way to make it work, or other teams are going to come calling very quickly and, you know, give them the contracts that they were promised at the end of the day.
Yeah, I agree. It's a shame. It's a massive, massive shame, because it's a brilliant club. I don't know the people behind the scenes, the volunteers, some of the coaching staff, because it's the other end of the country to me. It's just not a club that I'm hugely familiar with. But I know, as I say, speaking to someone like Jen O'Neill, who has those really close links with the club, some fantastic people there who've worked tirelessly for so long to get the club to the position that it is now, and for it to take that step backwards to that part-time model, I just don't understand it. I think it's a real kick in the teeth to the supporters. It's a kick in the teeth to the players who've gone there under the assumption that they're going to get full-time football, and now they've got to try and figure out a way to be competitive in a league where you've got the likes of City and Chelsea and Arsenal all trying to reinforce, all trying to build, Liverpool as well. It's very, very difficult to see how they can compete next year with those top teams if they have this part-time model, but it remains to be seen. They've been very tight-lipped since that announcement was made as to what their plans are, and I guess we'll just have to see over the next few months before the season starts on what they plan to do. But yeah, it's an interesting one, mate. Really, really interesting, and a shame. A real, real shame. But sticking with England and some of the moves that have taken place, and one of the biggest that happened in the last week was that of Crystal Dunne joining the FAWSL, coming to Chelsea Ladies, leaving Washington Spirit. Now, this isn't just any American player, is it, JJ? This is the player that was voted second in the voting for US Women's National Team Player of the Year, came runner-up to Tobin Heath, one of the brightest young stars in US soccer, and she has decided to carry on her playing days, at least for the next year or so, in England. Massive, massive signing for Chelsea Ladies.
It is. And, you know, there's been a lot of things pointing to she wanted out at Washington Spirit, as that roster continues to take a word out of your pocket, Kieran, get decimated over the last few weeks, because they're having big stars moving left, right, and center Not sure really truly what's going on there. We may find more about it when you and I take in the NWSL draft in a couple of days' time. But, you know, listen, that's a big move for Chelsea, because not only are they getting a player who I still feel has a lot more to go to reach her potential, but that's a scary thought because she's already one of the more dynamic attacking players that the U.S. has. She can play on the outside, but she's not afraid to take defenders on and make them look silly in the process with their speed. And, you know, having her opposite Eni Aluko on the wings, Fran Kirby up front amongst others, that's going to be a very tough team to beat on the attack.
Well, you mentioned amongst others. I mean, this is where it becomes a bit of a child in a candy shop situation, JJ, because Emma Hayes has an awful lot of attacking talent to choose from. You've mentioned Fran Kirby, Eni Aluko joining Crystal Dan. You've also got Gemma Davison, Karen Carney, who they signed last year. Jisoo Yoon plays in just behind those attacking players. You've also got a young player like Beth England. They signed Glasgow City's top scorer last year, Erin Cuthbert, as well. I might have even missed out others, but that is a lot of attacking talent to be thrown at a defence in any game next year. And Crystal Dunn's just going to be one part of that.
Yeah, she will, and I think the player you're looking for is another signing that they brought in last month, Ramona Bachmann. So, I mean, you're talking speed on speed on speed, on tactical whereabouts, on skill. I mean, you look at, I think it's kind of funny because we get this a lot over here in the States talking about Liverpool men. Their front six is worldly. All they have to do is fix their back four, and they're going to be the best team in the world. I think it's kind of almost going along the same lines. And if you want to talk about Chelsea's back line, well, they're already pretty solid there. And then they have the goalkeeper that I think who was the best in the world last year, in Hedvig Lindahl. So where can they go from here?
Well, they've strengthened that defence, haven't they? They signed Norwegian captain Maren Mjelde, didn't they, before Christmas as well. So she can play in either the defensive position or in midfield. And that is a very, very, I think, sensible move by Emma Hayes. When you've got all that attacking talent, you need those experienced players behind them as and when you don't have the ball. And someone like Maren Mjelde, who has a ridiculous amount of talent and a lot of experience as well, and still only, I think, 27. She's at that age where she's coming in the peak of her career and is going to make that team a lot more solid. But, yeah, how I could forget Ramona Bachmann, I don't know, because one of my favourite players to watch in European football. I mean, we'd be talking more about her probably if it wasn't for Crystal Dunn. I know there was a lot of attention on her when she did join, but for Emma Hayes to be able to get her as well, unbelievable signing. I'm not quite sure we saw the best of her at Wolfsburg, if I'm being honest. I'm not sure she was able to replicate the form that she had at FC Rosengard before she went to Wolfsburg. But we know what she is capable of. And if you think about, we could see on any given day, JJ, we could see Crystal Dunn down the right, Ramona Bachmann down the left, and someone like Fran Kirby or Eni Aluko down the middle. As you said, that's just pace.
It's scary. It is really scary, Kieran. And, you know, good for them, because they set out to go challenge for the top. Well, guess what? Not only the fact that they are going to be challenging for the top, they get a full this spring season right now. This is a beautiful opportunity to test it out, because what's the worst thing that they're going to that's going to happen? They don't win the spring season. There's no Champions League spots in line. It's just a kind of an exercise, if anything, a competitive exercise, don't get me wrong, because players will still be playing for some, but Emma Hayes is going to get 9 matches to test out what is going to be her best formation, and then come next August, when the season starts, they're going to be ready to go.
And equally, Manchester City women. Now, obviously, with Chelsea making all these signings, people are asking whether Man City might be looking to replicate that and bring in some high-profile signings of their own. Maybe not so high-profile, but no doubt a very, very good signing in terms of building the squad and adding some competition for places. They brought in Birmingham City forward Melissa Lawley. Now, not sure how much people outside of the UK will know about Melissa Lawley, but very, very experienced individual for a young player. Has played for both Birmingham City and Bristol Academy before that. I think she had some really good competition to the forward places, and it's maybe an area where City needed a bit more competition, because other than Jane Ross as an out-and-out striker, They haven't really got anyone because they played Nikita Paris wide, they played Kosovari Aslani wide. Tony Duggan is more effective, in my opinion, coming in off of the left and rather than as an out-and-out number nine. So I think Melissa Lawley is a decent signing, JJ.
Yeah, like you said, it adds depth, which is something scary to think about, obviously, with Manchester City going the entire season basically perfect. I mean, they made very, very minor slips along the way. Getting a kind of a secondary option as a central striker, as you said, City right now are loaded wide. They don't really need any more help there. Obviously, last year they had, you know, the rotational issues. They're also hit by a couple of injuries or players just coming back into form from injury. So it's good to always have that depth, and especially if they can go out and sign a couple extra players, they may not need the world-class superstar anymore, because I think they've got those. But having hungry professionals who want to earn time at one of the best clubs in England right now, that's never a bad decision.
Well, the last player they signed from Birmingham City was Izzy Christensen, and she turned out to be a pretty decent signing, and that's an understatement. She has become an important squad member for England, and over the 2 years that she's been at City, I think it's 2 years, she's become a really, really important player for them as well. So I'm sure Melissa Lawley will have a decent career at Manchester City, and we'll see her score a few goals for the team as well, not just in the league, but in the Champions League as well. Another club that's made a good signing, JJ, over the Christmas period was Liverpool. It was one of the worst kept secrets over here in England. They signed Casey Stoney from Arsenal, and Arsenal have seen a few departures since the finish or the completion of last season. We obviously know about the Spanish trio that left. Casey missed the end of the season. We're not quite sure why, but she certainly didn't feature in the last couple of games for Arsenal. And Rachel Yankee and Emma Byrne have both been confirmed as having left the club in the last few weeks as well. So three really experienced players that have left the team. But Casey going to Liverpool, good addition for them, isn't it? Because they've got some good young players up at the Merseyside club, and now they've got an experienced head to add to that.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different look that we saw from Liverpool the years that they were winning the title. It was a team that they were the ones really starting to make the early moves and getting, not to say the big stars, but they had themselves a real unit. And I think that's also key at the end of the day. You don't always need a team that is, you know, they're going to be headliners all over the pitch. But if you can have a group that brings together a little bit of difference from every player and every type of personality, that's going to help. And obviously Casey Stoney is, you know, been there, done that, you know, one of the top defenders in the league, you know, and also longtime representative for a country as well. So, you know, having that experience head, I think, is right. And as you said, that can balance nicely with some of the younger players, and, you know, they can feed off of her knowledge. And hopefully we get to see Liverpool, you know, get themselves right back into the mix, because as we know, they're two-time champions of the league. They can get the job done when it matters.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. No doubt more movement will be taking place over the coming months as we head into pre-season in FAWSL, and I'm sure there are clubs looking at many, many players all over the world. Now, we'll have a little break, JJ, and when we come back, we will concentrate on North America and, of course, the NWSL College Draft.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So, JJ, I mentioned before the break that we're going to talk about the draft. One thing I'd like to discuss very quickly, because it's going to be announced tomorrow, it's important that we talk about the Western New York Flash, because Jeff Kasouf and Dan Laletta of Equalizer Soccer and 442 USA broke the news at the end of last week that the Western New York Flash are to be sold and are relocating to North Carolina. Now, this is the first franchise in NWSL history that is going to be relocated. I just wanted to get your take on it before it's officially announced this week.
Yeah, I mean, also you got a hat tip to Jeff DeVeronico, who's been the longtime beat writer and a big sports news presence up in Rochester, who also broke more news on that as well. It's disappointing that the current champions of the league, all of a sudden they can't, you know, celebrate that, you know, first season back with their fans and maybe try to build something. Because, you know, there's no secret about it. Ever since year one of this league, the Flash have suffered on the attendance side and also some intriguing decisions on the front office end as well. It's a move that obviously it's going to go into a hotbed of soccer in the United States and the Triangle, the capital region of North Carolina, obviously, we're assuming that that's where they're going to be playing. They've got a beautiful stadium there. It's a longtime host of the College Cup, or the Final Four for the NCAA soccer. You obviously have North Carolina and Duke, two very renowned college programs within, 10, 15 miles of that facility. So you're going to have many players, who are going to be invested, or many people, I should say, that are going to be invested in that club, good soccer heads. It's just curious to me, and we'll obviously find out more information as we go along, who's going to be playing there, as in what players are going to be carried over. Is it going to be part of the team? Is it going to be the whole Western New York Flash team? We don't know. Are they going to start from scratch? Obviously, it's a relocation and not a new franchise with one franchise folding, so that plays a factor, but I think there's a lot of questions that we have to figure out.
Yeah, go on.
No, I was going to say, especially in short order, because you have the college draft coming up, and oh, by the way, the newly named North Carolina something, we don't know actually what the team name is at the time of recording, they have a couple of picks in the first round, so it's going to be a very influential draft for them.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm kind of excited to hear whether it's going to be with the X pick of the 2017 NWSL College Draft, North Carolina FC selects as opposed to the Western New York Flash selects. It's going to be it's going to be interesting. Really, really interesting. Don't want to dwell on that one too long because by the time this show comes out, it will only be a short amount of time before the official announcement is made. But agree with you, it's a shame that the most recent NWSL champions aren't going to get an opportunity to kind of celebrate with their fans. I think that's the biggest downside. I saw some of the fan accounts on Twitter kind of outlaying that, we never got an opportunity to celebrate the achievement of the players. They won the title in Houston and then the season was finished. The fans are expecting for them to come back and maybe on the first home game of the season show their appreciation, and they're not going to get an opportunity to do that. But sometimes these things happen, and from what people have told me, the move to North Carolina is certainly going to be good for the team, and there's a big soccer following there, and obviously we know about the history of the University of North Carolina and Anson Dorrans and what he's done there. Big women's soccer culture in North Carolina. So, I certainly don't see it as a bad thing, but I do understand the disappointment of those in Western New York. And as you say, there are some no doubt going to lose their job or certainly not looking to relocate to North Carolina. It'll be interesting to see what players go over there as well. But I'm sure we'll know more in the next 24, 48 hours as and when that announcement is made. But as I said, JJ, this is pretty much an opportunity for you to take the mic and roll with it, because we're going to talk about the NWSL College Draft. Now, obviously, I like to do my research in the lead up to the draft because I don't get as much access as you do to the college game. I know of a number of players, but I guess the things that I'd like to talk to you about are what we can expect from this week's draft, and not necessarily who you think is going to be the top 10, but maybe pick some of the players out that you think people should keep an eye on.
Well, it's not only that. This is an opportunity for clubs in the NWSL to rebuild a little bit, or an opportunity for them to make some new waves. You first look at Boston. As you know, Matt Beard, a bit, this is a team that's very much in transition right now, bringing in players that want to fit under his system. The Breakers own five of the first dozen picks or so of this draft. So they're going to have an opportunity to make some moves and really, try to do better in what their finish was last year and really the last few years. So it's an opportunity for teams to make a few changes, for some to add depth, and for others, it could be a day where there's going to be a few moves made. In terms of teams that we're going to see pretty active on that day, I expect the Washington Spirit. We've talked about already with Crystal Dunn moving. They have a lot of changes that need to be made, and they don't have a whole lot of picks to go to right now. their first one is the second to last pick in the second round. There's four rounds of 10 picks per round, so they have a long time to wait. I wouldn't be surprised one or two more pieces get moved there. In terms of players right now, you know, you obviously have world-class talent coming into this. There is little doubt about that. You obviously, we're going to the home of the most recent national champions. That'd be the University of Southern California, going to L.A. Morgan Andrews, world-class talent in the midfield in her own right. She's no doubt going to be a prime target very early on, if not the number one pick. Rose Lavelle, obviously another very talented midfielder and a great personality as well. She is a very intriguing character. If you haven't gone and checked on her Twitter account yet, I would strongly go and do that. You've got a lot of forwards coming in, but then again, over in past years, and I had a good conversation with Jen Cooper, the Keeper Notes, who gave this podcast a lot of good remarks. So a lot of love in the podcasting community of women's soccer. But
well, we like hers as well. And if you do, it's one of the podcasts that I do actually listen to, and I've been on it as well. So if you don't listen to it, The Mix Zone, which is Jen Cooper's podcast, I certainly recommend you have a listen. But carry on, mate.
Yeah, no, and I was on that last episode and talked a bit about the draft. But forwards are going to be at a premium. However, forwards haven't always necessarily translated into having success at the professional level, because sometimes it's just different looks of scoring. You can have players, not to say, the college game is becoming a lot more tactically sound and possession-oriented from years past, but still, you can have some very athletic players that can figure out a way to get the ball into the back of the net, but you're going to have good forwards in there. A lot of U.S. former youth internationals, a couple of players, obviously, who have gotten a few caps very, very recently. Ashley Hatch, who was just capped by the U.S. In their second most recent camp out of BYU. She's going to be one of those top forwards who are going to be heading out, obviously. You have Harvard's Midge Purse, who's been a longtime member of youth national teams. She could be in there as well. But yeah, no, so definitely expect a lot of attacking players. There could be a few goalkeepers taken. Defense is a little shaky, I would have to say, because you have, Kadisha Buchanan, who's obviously already gone. She's playing for Lyon. You have a couple of players who we thought were going to be electing to go to the draft who are not at least registered as of now. Defense could be an issue at times in terms of trying to get depth there. But all in all, I think, we have a very, very strong class going out.
You mentioned Boston Breakers, 5 picks in the first 11 after the trade that they made with the Chicago Red Stars last week for picks. I spoke to Matt Beard for a piece that will be going up on the Equalizer website this week, and he was quite open and said this draft will define the future of the Boston Breakers over the next few years. With that in mind, how much pressure is there on the Breakers to get this right? Because we've seen over the last few years a team that's really struggled. They essentially have almost the pick of the best this year. How important is it, number one, that they get it right? But number two, how much pressure is there that they get this right? Because if they don't, that's a waste of 5 picks in the first 11.
Lots of pressure, and absolutely they have to get this one right, because there is loads of talent, as I said, that is available. They did a good amount of work in getting this roster overhauled over this offseason. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, however you look at it, the results just haven't been falling in their direction over the past few years. But the Breakers, you obviously look at, the National Women's Soccer League, you look at Portland because they have a massive, support in numbers. Washington Spirit, in the sense that, it seems like they always put a good product out on the field and they have another good rabid supporting system. The Boston Breakers are a team that they've set down a business model and it works. They are in a very competitive area, Kieran, where you have teams at the professional level in men's sports who win championships year in and year out. They've got the 4 major colleges in that area with Boston College, Boston University, Harvard, Northeastern. That's the Beanpot, which you can't get more competitive in that, in an area in terms of college sports outside of maybe Philadelphia's Big Five, but they've now kind of slotted nicely to, you know, with their business model. They are growing from the youth. They have their own development academy. They have college select teams. They have a full reserve team that they go to as well. They just haven't got the results with the pro team yet. So they've been building towards this draft. They've got a lot of local talent that they could pick from as well, but they have to do what is necessary to, I think at this point, you don't have to say making the playoffs is a must, even though every club will always go and say, well, number one goal is to make the playoffs because we want to win a championship. But if they don't finish top five this year, Kieran, or at least have that real promise to get there, then this was a wasted year.
When we hear those words with the first pick of the 2017 NWSL College Draft, the Boston Breakers selects, who would you fill that gap with?
Personally, I'd fill it with Morgan Andrews, just because she's got an eye for the game that is well beyond her years right now. She's savvy in the midfield. She can pull the strings. She can sit in. She can get into the attack as well, and is, you know, kind of almost Paul Scholes-esque defensive, though she doesn't go studs in all the time and will. She doesn't break ankles like Scholes used to do back in the day.
Listen, that's not a compliment, mate. Paul Scholes couldn't tackle for Toffee.
Oh, yeah, no, he couldn't, but he set the tone. She wins out possession. So, you know, she's one of those players that I think that can really put a stamp on that team, and she's a local kid as well, you know, grew up right over the border in New Hampshire. So she would either go or perhaps Rose Lavelle, who's also in the same mold, more of the attacking mindset, but is creative as it comes and will always look to try and meg someone and then have a go at goal. So, yeah, either one of those two, I think, are going to be taking number one.
In terms of maybe the pieces of the puzzle that certain teams need to fill, what players do you think are most suitable? Maybe pick a player for each team that you think could do a job for each side in the league.
It's tough. Because, again, it's very challenging to go into the mindset of what each coach, each general manager wants to do on that day, because there'll be moves made literally right up to the start of the draft, as you and I found out firsthand last year when Sky Blue traded or officially announced at, I think it was 7:30 a.m. before 10 o'clock first pick that they traded Nadia Nadim to Portland just to move up in the ranking or the draft order to get Raquel Rodriguez. So you never know what's going to happen. Well, I'll say this much, and it is a shameless plug, but coming up in the next couple of days, you go on to rgamemag.com. I'll have a full breakdown of what every team could be looking to go to at that time, when their first pick is called, and then who some targets could be going forward in the later rounds.
Not a shameless plug at all, mate. Not a shameless plug at all. Probably a good way to round up the NWSL draft as well. So we'll leave it there. And as you say, definitely have a look at ourgamemag.com in the next couple of days, and you'll be able to get more information on the NWSL draft. And JJ and I certainly will be bringing you as much as we can from the draft. We may even do a little live stint, JJ, if we get some Wi-Fi there as well afterwards, mightn't we? I think that might be something a little bit different to do, maybe through Twitter. We don't have a Facebook page, so keep an eye on our Twitter pages for details. We'll try and do maybe a live feed from LA and give some thoughts, or maybe we'll preview something. I don't know. We'll do something.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure out what we can.
Let
what we've
the
got.
People know.
We will. But we'll round out there, mate. Short break, and then we'll round things up.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
Right, JJ, brings us to the end of the show. Before we finish, very, very quickly, one last thing that is occurring in the next 24 hours is the FIFA Best Player Award. Who are you going for? Carly Lloyd, Melanie Behringer, or Marta as your Player of the Year?
You got to go with the player who won gold, Kieran. It's Melanie Behringer. She had a brilliant Olympic tournament. Continues to do wonders domestically as well. So I think that one, if we're talking about the best player of that three in the 2016 calendar year, she was it.
Yep, agreed. Agreed. No argument from me. Coach of the Year is also going to be announced. Jill Ellis, Pierre Sundhage, and Sylvia Knight. Who are you going for?
Well, I'm still confused to this moment why Jill Ellis was named in that three, and I'm taking my U.S. bias out of it. We're talking about the Coach of the Year in terms of who was the best. She was not one of the best three. Best 10, sure, perhaps. Why not? John Herdman probably should have been in there. Because then you would look at it, okay, well, you have one, you know, coaches leading 1, 2, and 3, and then you go for the gold once again. Sylvia Knight walking out on top, and I think that, you know, that winning this award would be a nice little cap off.
Yeah, again, no arguments from me on that one. You can't go against the gold medal winning coach of the Olympics. I think it'd be a nice way to round Sylvia's time as the German women's national team coach. If people are interested, we actually did our own Women's Soccer Zone Awards on social media. If you go to @WosoZone, there's a pinned tweet at the top where we chose our Players of the Year, Young Player of the Year, Coach of the Year. Actually, I didn't even choose Sylvia Knight as my Coach of the Year. It was Martin Sjogren for me from Linköping. I think if you can win the league against the odds when you've got Rosengard in that division, then for me you deserve Coach of the Year. But there you go. So have a look on Twitter on @WosoZone and you can see our picks for our Zone Awards. We will round it up there. As mentioned, we're on Twitter @WosoZone. You can contact us on email on wosozone@gmail.com. To listen to the show, we're on audioboom.com/channel/WosoZone or on iTunes. As I said, we've got some exciting developments coming up over the coming weeks, so do keep an eye on our social media channels where we will announce those. JJ, thanks as always for your time, mate.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much, guys. We will speak to you from LA. And until then, take care of yourselves and bye-bye. We'll be right back.